5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
The dark side of the Huddle Moon. Immutably amazing crypto wisdom. This lunar mission is the February 2020 episode of Crypto Currently. On this episode, Eric Voorhees predicts a financial meltdown in the next 5 years, and we talk about what that means for crypto. We hear how Germany is going to war with gold. We learn that Tron is joining up with Steemit, and Shopify is joining Facebook's Libra Association. We hear how they're tracking the coronavirus using distributed ledger technology, and we hear that the US DOJ is calling coin mixing a crime, and we get US politicians' varying stances on crypto and crypto regulations. We also hear about big moves from the Winklevoss twins and big claims from Charles Hodgkinson. We hear about a crypto battle at CoinMint and Craig Wright going absolutely mad. We get some crypto news from Switzerland, and we hear another crypto OG lamenting the path BTC is on, and much more on the dark side of the HODL moon.
Copy. This show is proudly sponsored by Salamantech's point-of-sale devices and software. Tired of all the headaches dealing with cryptocurrency? You don't know what a private key is? You don't want to deal with exchanges? Well, if you're a business and you just want to run your business without thinking about cryptocurrency headaches, look no further than Salamantech's. We provide point-of-sale software that allows you to get paid in fiat currency, that's euros, allowing your customers to pay in cryptocurrency, that's BTC, ETH, and a host of others.
Dark Side of the HODL Moon proudly uses the audio services of Eye the Sound. Beyond the amazing sound production, they've really been a sounding board, pun intended, for our show, giving us great customer support and constructive criticism and feedback. So if you want a little bit more personalized attention you're not going to get from a bigger provider, check out iTheSound.com. All right, and we're back with another Crypto Currently. This is the February 2020 edition. And Josh, how are you doing there? I see you're wearing a mask.
Yeah, man, I'm wearing a mask. It's Corona season right now, and I'm not talking about the type of Corona that you would drink either. It's going pretty crazy in South Korea right now with the Corona. I mean, it's been on the TV news 24/7. All the TV channels are absolutely loving this wall-to-wall coverage because there's over 500 people infected with this this Corona virus, this Corona 19. I don't know if you've heard about it. It's probably not that big in America.
No, well, as you know, I used to live in Korea too, and yeah, it's been blowing up on my social media a little bit, and I heard some woman was going to church, and she was sick, and then they decided to spread a different kind of message all over the country.
Yeah, I mean, that's one way to spread the message, that's for sure. I mean, that story of that church in particular is pretty crazy. I mean, the guy's 86 years old. He thinks he's the second coming of Jesus Christ. And there are thousands of people that actually believe that and attend the church. And unfortunately, it originated in a place called Daegu, which is kind of in the southeast of the country. And then they've been spreading it around pretty quickly. I mean, it's more than doubled in the numbers in the last 48 hours. So it's over 500 people. People are getting scared. So
yeah.
Anyway,
And the origin of the coronavirus seems to be leaking or turning more and more towards the idea that it maybe came from a Chinese biomedical weapons lab in Wuhan, not from eating bats or something else. It seems like and right after this leak, they had a directive in China about securing these kind of labs more securely. So yeah, hopefully if it is some sort of weaponized thing, it wasn't weaponized too severely. Otherwise, this could really get out of hand.
Yeah, I mean, some AI models have predicted that up to 50 million people could be infected, and then in total, like hundreds of thousands could die around the world. I'm not really too sure that that's going to happen. Essentially, it is a form of coronavirus that is just novel. It's new. But coronaviruses have existed before. This is just the first time it's crossed over from one species to another. It's, some people do suspect it's a modified strain that originated in Wuhan, some laboratory. But then again, Zero Hedge was banned from Twitter for posting such things. So perhaps we'll be banned from the internet for even discussing it. Who knows? But it's pretty interesting to see the actual reaction on the ground. People are literally just staying at home. And I'm looking out the window in my apartment, and people that would normally be walking to the shops are just choosing to stay inside. So
yeah, that's smart. Yeah, stay inside, wear your mask, don't go outside. Yeah, hope things work out well. And in Korea, I guess it's the second highest infection rate after China. But, you know, Josh, I've got the crypto virus. So let's get into our stories for this week.
Yeah, from one coronavirus to the other, let's talk about DLT goes viral as live coronavirus tracking spreads to the blockchain. So this is a story from Cointelegraph by Rachel Wolfson that was put out earlier this month on the 6th, so a couple of weeks ago. But now you can see the Hedera Hashgraph DLT is basically being used to be to track the coronavirus, and you can visualize it along with John Hopkins University, which actually Johns Hopkins University has some pretty cool data science courses on Coursera that I'd recommend people check out. What do you think about that, that they're actually using the blockchain for data visualization, known as Hashlog?
Yeah, well, it's interesting. They're using Hedera Hashgraph. I know a couple of people in the area that are really big fans of it. They recently had some big partnerships. But I think any sort of blockchain that's tracking it is good, because you can't go back and change what's written on the ledger, because a lot of people are not necessarily trusting that China's giving us accurate numbers with infection rates. But if you can get accurate numbers logged on a blockchain, I think it's great. It can only be good, and it's kind of a test case for any sort of future issues.
Yeah, actually, the blockchain has been used for something related to this already. I mean, I don't have a story for it, so I can't put it in the show notes, but I'm sure you could Google it. It's the doctor who actually put out some type of private notice to his friends and family on WeChat. He basically said, there's a new strain of what looks like to be SARS. This was back in like December or early January. Keep safe, stay indoors. And then he was visited by the police and told, like, don't you understand? This misinformation is bad. And then that guy turned out to be later infected himself, because he was treating so many of these people with these strange cases of flu. He got infected and he died. So there was a bit of a social media outpouring on China, if such a thing even exists. And some developers put this on the blockchain, his name, and with the "don't you understand" reference on the Ethereum blockchain, I believe. So blockchain's been used twice in this case, and I'm sure that this is another way to prove that it's censorship resistant, which is very important. All right, let's move on to the next story, which is about Germany. So this is on zerohedge.com. Do you want to lead this one, Cade?
Yeah. Of course, gold and crypto are kind of intertwined. We've had a couple interesting interviews with some gold bugs like Matthew Kanker. But Germany is going to war with gold. It's kind of similar to some countries that are trying to go to war with crypto. And why I think this is huge is they're decreasing the anonymous purchase threshold from about 10,000 pounds to 2,000 pounds, which means you can't even buy the popular 1 ounce gold coins anymore. And what I find is really interesting is the reason they're doing it. They're saying it's for money laundering, it's to combat crime. But some interesting articles and some interesting stats, and I love how Zero Hedge throws these in, is that there were 137,097 suspicious transactions, and only 239.17% involved gold. So almost none of them involved gold. And of those 239 cases, only 4 involved amounts below the 10,000 euro threshold. So it kind of begs the question, what kind of, are they really trying to find financial crimes? 0.17%, and then only 4 are below that amount. That's like 0.002%. So, why would the government lie about this? The idea is that Germany's in trouble. Germany isn't this economic engine that can't be stopped, and that they want this information later for gold confiscation. and they don't want their cities to their citizens to hold gold. And actually, Germany is the people in Germany are really big gold bugs. I know India is kind of known for really loving gold, but Germans really love gold as well too. So I thought this was really interesting, and people have been piling up to get in line before this directive goes through. But yeah, I think it's a really important. And if you're in Germany, stock up on your gold bullion.
Well, they are hodlers in one sense, but they all hodl fiat. I mean, they've got a lot of savings in their accounts. I mean, and they're saving these euros up. They're not circulating them. That maybe the velocity of money slowed down in Germany. Maybe some of the economists there are a bit worried that there might be a recession around the corner. There's also the Brexit effect. Let's not forget that. I mean, I was reading a different story today, and it said that 75 billion euro hole from Brexit, and the EU hasn't managed to agree to the new budget proposals. Some of the bigger countries, and now that becomes Ireland. I mean, Ireland has to step up to the plate and fill a bit of the void that the UK has left there. And they've been slapped with a massive bill, like an increase in what they have to contribute. The way that EU works, it's pretty communist, pretty socialist in the way that it works. If you're a country and you're doing well, then you just have to pay more, and you give that to some of the countries that are not doing so well. So they haven't managed to agree on this new budget for the EU, and it probably means that the Germans have also been asked to increase their contributions. It's not really an ask. It's kind of like, increase your contributions. But Angela Merkel refused. She was the first one to say, no, we're not paying more. So I think that this is going to continue in the European Union. It's going to be more of this. It's the natural consequence of having some type of centralized supranational government. All right, yeah. Let's go to the next story then.
Definitely, yeah. From crypto regulations, or from gold or money regulations in Europe, to crypto regulations in the U.S. So Andrew Yang, he said this earlier this month. He's actually just recently dropped out. U.S. has to fix its hodgepodge crypto regulations. So right now it's a little complicated, and it's not really sure which agency is supposed to be regulating it. Is it FinCEN? Is it CFTC? Is it the SEC? And I don't agree with a lot of his policies, but at least he was one of the only ones that mentioned crypto at all, or even had a crypto policy. And he was, more or less positive about it. So I think it's, important for just politicians to say this, like, hey, these laws need to, if they're going to exist, they need to make sense. They can't be so complicated. And I think that's just a nice thing to hear in the crypto press, and it kind of trickled into the mainstream press as well.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, having someone that was running for president actually saying this is pretty good. I'm not sure if Andrew Yang is going to be successful in the future. I know that he's dropped out now. He said that he hasn't ruled out running again. But anyway, it's good that he's brought this to at least the top of mind, at least for a couple of minutes. I mean, I'm sure the media runs pretty quick in America and people have forgotten already. But the Yang Gang bringing up crypto is pretty cool. Let's talk about some of the other, let's talk about some people that are pro and against crypto in Congress. So there's a top 10 list on Cointelegraph that talks about this. I'm not sure about these people, because as a Brit living in South Korea, I don't know who these representatives really are. Like, I'm sure even Americans won't know who many of these people are unless they are from the actual state or from nearby bordering states. So I don't necessarily think we should go through point by point, but unless you know any of these guys, like,
no. Well, we don't have to list them all off. I can give you my expert American perspective. Rep Tom Emmer is from my home state, where I spent most of my life. I'm now currently in Rhode Island, but I just wanted to make the point that, there's some that are pro, but there's also some that are against. You know, this isn't a top 10 like pro crypto list, but it's kind of split between Republicans and Democrats. There's pro crypto Republicans, pro crypto Democrats. There's also anti crypto Republicans, anti crypto Democrats. It seems like the Democrats tend to be more against. And just a couple that I thought were pretty interesting is there was actually a blockchain programmer in Congress, Rep. Bill Foster from Illinois. So he's a former particle physicist and blockchain programmer. So they do have a congressional blockchain caucus, which is pro crypto. So again, it's kind of hard to see where the crypto regulations are going to go in the U.S., but it seems to be edging towards more clarity and not banning it, but just regulating it, which I think is positive.
Yeah, that's good. We've got a similar thing in the UK called the APPG. It's called, it stands for an, it's all, well, actually these APPGs are for several things, but there's one for blockchain and cryptocurrency. It just means an all-party parliamentary group, which basically means that it's not partisan in any way, and it's it has like a selection of different people and experts to talk about this. Grant Shapps, one of the former housing secretaries, is quite a big guy on that when it comes to the UK. Actually, someone visited my LinkedIn profile that was a member of the APPG the other day, so that's what reminded me of that. So I think that it's quite interesting, but they're always keeping an eye on it. The US and also the UK, they're just not too bothered about cryptocurrency, honestly. Right now, it's not big enough part of the economy, and it the only thing that I can think of is the rest of the world is waiting for the US to make a decision, and whatever it does decide, most people are going to follow. So,
why is the rest of the world waiting to see what the US does? Are we the thought leaders of the world still? Why can't someone else take charge?
Well, I think you are the thought. I think that you guys are the thought leaders of the world, especially when it comes to. I mean, behind London, maybe New York is bigger. I'm not sure, but London's the biggest super city in the world. I think that New York's very close, but I think New York leads finance in the world. So I think that that's the reason why. Honestly, the financial service sector in the UK is more advanced than it is in the US, and that's because the US is fragmented. There are too many different bodies that have, they basically have contradictory rules, and I think that there needs to be some type of unification, and it does require an actual, like maybe some laws to be passed, but I don't think any politicians are going to be putting their, they're going to be staking their manifestos or whatever it's called in the UK, the equivalent, the US, the equivalent of a manifesto on cryptocurrency anytime soon. So I think it will just be a minor issue going forward. But nice. Speaking about the law and regulations in the US about cryptocurrency, we have to talk then about the developer Larry Harmon, who was arrested for essentially being involved in some mixing software. So he's a software developer, and the Department of Justice have basically said that any Bitcoin mixing is a crime, because if it can be used for like darknet purposes, this is in reference to Alphabay, which is kind of like a Silk Road type of thing where you can buy whatever you want on the dark web or the deep web, whatever the cool kids call it these days. So he's been arrested, or he's been he's in hot water basically for this. So what are your thoughts on that? About that type of thing?
Yeah, well, I mean, I don't think they're going to prosecute people for coin mixing. That might just be just one of the points they're going to make in their legal document. In the U.S., you know, the lawyers are known, especially government lawyers, are known for throwing the book at people and just giving a bunch of charges and seeing what sticks. I mean, a lot of wallets now have coin mixing integrated. It's already built in. It's already the default option on a couple wallets that already have it. I know the Bitcoin.com wallet is supposed to have it in a couple months. So if you have a Bitcoin.com wallet, there's 10 million all over the world. The default option is just to mix your crypto. So then there'd be like, you know, millions of people all over. So it has to be maybe more to do with the whatever underlying case it was involved with. It was a lot of money that he laundered through crypto. I think maybe it's a little bit of a clickbaity headline. I haven't read the whole thing, but I think it's that really is true, it's a scary precedent, but it's kind of hard for me to buy.
Well, I was going to say it isn't actually a precedent, right? I mean, there was a developer arrested for let's say, helping the North Koreans understand cryptocurrency. There was an Ethereum developer that was arrested maybe 2 months ago for basically helping cybercrime, is what his charge was. But it was because he was educating the North Korean programmers about cryptocurrency. So don't go to North Korea and teach them anything about computers, guys. You'll be locked up in the equivalent of a gulag wherever you return. All right, so moving from gulags to actually the opposite of a gulag, which is probably one of the most free and fair countries in the world, Switzerland.
Yeah.
Go on. Yeah. What's going on there?
And city in Switzerland is now accepting Bitcoin payments. This is actually the second city, and it's just another quick story, but it just shows that when governments start accepting crypto and more cities, more and more regions, hopefully more and more countries start doing it, it's just going to lock it in and make it really hard to stop or ban. And they can pay with it through, it looks like, a point of sale device from Bitcoin Suisse. And
It's pretty cool. I mean, Switzerland is a great example of what decentralization can do, because Switzerland has got a pretty unique system. I mean, it's all divided up into really small cantons, and each canton has a lot of power to implement local laws that are unique to that particular place. So they have a system where you can call a referendum on almost anything if you get the right amount of signatures. And I think it's relatively small, like 25,000 signatures. And then you can have a referendum on an issue that affects that local area. But this can go even as far as as taxes, which is pretty rare for local governments to be able to implement taxation rules. So in Switzerland, one particular area has decided to implement taxation being accepted through cryptocurrency payments, which is pretty good. Now, New Zealand actually has this law on its books already about wages being able to be paid in cryptocurrency as well. So it's not a world first, but it's news, I guess. All right. So
yeah, definitely. I actually want to mention one other thing, is that the United States and New Hampshire, they had a similar rule and a similar bill. They actually retracted it because their reason was it was Bitcoin's price is not stable. But there's a very simple solution. They could accept crypto and immediately convert it to fiat, you know, have a sell order if it drops down. But it's just another example of the government not being able to come up with a simple solution to an easy payment system. But yeah, let's move on. And this is a project I'm a big fan of, and it's just a bold statement. I want to talk about it a little bit. It looks like Charles Hodgkinson said, "Cardano will become the most decentralized cryptocurrency in the world. I would say of a lot of the crypto famous people, he's one of the ones that I trust and respect the most. You know, with Cardano, they've been doing a lot of research and getting research in universities, publishing papers. And I do know this new upcoming fork is pretty important, and they've got a lot of other stuff in their roadmap. So I think it's just pretty interesting. You know, we're talking about a lot of cryptos becoming more centralized or state-backed, semi-private or private blockchain. So I think it's cool that he's trying to push the decentralization boundaries.
Yeah, I mean, Charles Hodgkinson is a really cool guy, especially he's trying to run a business as well. So there's always a bit of showmanship to what he's saying these days. He's a lot more savvy in front of the media. So let's keep an eye on that. I think it's pretty cool. He said it'll be 50 times more decentralized than Bitcoin. With the new Ouroboros Byzantine fault tolerant protocol or consensus algorithm. I don't know exactly what they're going to implement or when it will be. But let's watch this space. So from one decentralized place to, well, is it fair to say that Tron is not really a proper decentralized coin because it's so closely associated with Justin Sun, who is like a well-known self-promotion guy? I don't know. I've never been able to take Justin Sun too seriously. But honestly, as a businessman, he is very shrewd. He's managed to get his name out there.
He's got like 5 or 6 big projects right now. You can't deny that he's successful. So why are we talking about Tron today, Josh?
Well, because another announcement. I mean, he manages to pull off these big announcements all the time. Justin Sun has managed to basically sign a deal, or it they've announced that there's a joining of the Tron ecosystem with Steemit. So Steemit was a decentralized social media blogging platform that really did make a few waves, especially like in 2017 when the ICO craze was going on and people were thinking that Steemit was going to be potentially the Facebook for cryptocurrencies. And they even had their own coin that really did really well at that time. I mean, it still exists. It's just not as popular as it was. Yeah. I mean, you had a blog on there, right, Cade?
Yeah, you're like, Steemit was a social media program. You really slammed them like they don't even exist anymore. But yeah, but yeah, Steemit was. No, they're still around. But yeah, I think you're right. Like, I was on it. I just kind of got off because I got just a little frustrated because of there were people on there, but it was just a little bit difficult to use. The user experience wasn't great. I think when you sign up for an account, there's like 8 different keys, like a posting key, a logon key, like here's your private coins key, like literally there's like 8 giant keys, and like it was just hard to use, difficult to use. It wasn't like Facebook or YouTube, and you know that we're kind of branching out onto decentralized or free speech focused or decentralized platforms. Like, you know, we've got our BitChute account, we're gonna get probably a library account, we're gonna be on you know, just whatever's out there that's good. And you know, Steemit isn't great right now, so hopefully with this partnership maybe they can do their own little upgrade and maybe make it a better user experience. I think having a million keys, and it was complicated for me to use, and you know I'm fairly tech savvy, so it's like you're not going to get your mom or your grandma on the Steemit with 8 private keys and you're wondering how do I log in, and you can never log in again. So I think it's good. So we'll just see. But now they've got a lot of competition. They're ahead of the game, but I think other competitors have already surpassed them. So they're going to have to do something crazy like this Tron partnership to really get back to their market share.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, well, you've got to give it to Justin Sun. Like we said at the start, a great businessman in terms of getting his name out there, far more successful than us. So we can't really chastise him from the sidelines. So, from one successful businessman to a couple of business brothers, some twins, the crypto tycoons, the Winklevoss brothers.
And former Olympic athletes.
Yeah, I mean, these guys have had pretty successful lives so far, and it looks poised to continue in that fashion. So they've actually managed to obtain 6 stablecoin patents. Now, I don't exactly know how that you can patent a stable coin, but it must be for some specific aspect of it, some technology side. So they obviously see this as being a big deal. I actually do believe that stable coins are super important for the adoption of cryptocurrency, especially in places like the emerging economies, Southeast Asia, Africa, Latin America, where they need cryptocurrency because they don't actually have good fiat currency, and they don't really want to be, let's say, spending Bitcoin because it's quite a volatile thing. And also, it might be the one of the few things that you can hold on to hedge against any inflation. So having some type of cryptocurrency stablecoin is always good for those places that are at risk of going into hyperinflation. So I think stable coins are going to be good for adoption of cryptocurrency and help bring normal finance to the rest of the world in the future. So that's pretty interesting. What are your thoughts on what they've managed to patent, and where do you think about the stable coin situation in the future?
Yeah. Well, some of the patents are for changing the supply of stable coins on a public blockchain, and how to use it to pay dividends, which is strange because I think some cryptos already have this functionality. So I think they've been doing a lot of stuff in the crypto space. It's actually, I'm kind of halfway through the book, Bitcoin Billionaires, and it's really describing how having Mark Zuckerberg really screw them over kind of led them into the crypto space. They were pariahs in Silicon Valley, and they realized this was their way to get back at them and kind of change the narrative on them being like these, you know, kind of the bad characters in this author's previous book. But yeah, this is huge, and they're only going to continue to kind of be, I guess maybe you could say thought leaders in the crypto space, the Winklevoss twins. They definitely have more pro-government views than a lot of the other crypto people in the space that are more libertarian, crypto anarchist. So I guess it kind of balances out, and for people that think it's used by criminals and stuff, the Winklevoss twins are kind of telling the other narrative. But yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, man. And I think that's a valid point that, you know, for us to really see mass adoption, we're going to have some people out there in the regular mainstream world that are actually fighting the cause in, you know, in the legal sense and going and actually going to Congress and saying, hey, this is actually legit, and actually filing patents and things of that nature, rather than trying to be ANCAP legends like a lot of people are. Like in the DeFi world these days, people just say, well, I'm just going to build it, and the US government won't even understand what this is for another 20 years. But I think that you have to have some people that are actually dealing with the government and trying to work with the government. So it's quite good. Well, especially the Winklevoss twins, because, you know, the social network, as you mentioned. Now let's talk about the social network, Facebook. What's going on with the Libra Association?
Yeah, well, Josh, I just want to know, what was the last thing you bought on Shopify?
I think I muted my mic for a second there. Shopify is really good because it's really good at hiding that it's a Shopify site. So you might have bought things on Shopify without realizing it, to be honest. Shopify is the number one platform for e-commerce that's, well, in the world, really, for e-commerce sites. So if you want to run a shop and you just pay between the basic fee of like $29 a month up to premium, which can be like $70 a month. And then you can have enterprise solutions that scale up depending on how many people that you're serving. You can even have a light version, which is like $9, that is only a Facebook page. But when it comes to buying stuff on Shopify, you can basically buy anything. So it's like a WordPress for e-commerce, essentially. So then partnering with well, they've now become members of the Libra Association. So in the last few months, lots of big names have left the Libra Association. And I think, obviously, the people working for this part of Facebook, the Libra part of Facebook, have had to, you know, go back to the drawing board a little bit and think about what they can do strategically to get some hype behind this again. So I think the Shopify bringing the Shopify into the association is very good because it has over 1 million stores on Shopify.
And I would say one thing is that you've had four or five very big companies leave. And even though, you know, just one big company's joined, I think it kind of changes the narrative a little bit. And I think if Libra become something, it's really going to be huge for these companies. I think the reason the other companies left is because they were risk averse, because I think there's a high payout, but it can be a little bit of risky, and they want to be on the good side of the regulators. I think that's why they left. I don't think they, you know, really hated Libra. They just felt the pressure. They couldn't take the heat, and Shopify is willing to maybe take on a little risk. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, Shopify is a massive platform. I mean, it is huge. So there are people that spend their entire lives working on Shopify e-commerce stores. It's a particular niche of development, in fact. So I know a couple of people that are Shopify developers. They spend all their time improving that. Shopify has just released some type of new framework or some new CMS recently. I think it's called Liquid, which is pretty interesting. I've used Shopify before. I mean, back in 2015, 16, when the Brexit election was going on, Brexit referendum, me and a mate, we basically ran like a Shopify store that went through Facebook. So Shopify handled the goods with a plugin for Printful. So I think that you can say since 2015, Shopify's definitely expanded. It's gone from strength to strength. It's one of the, if not the most popular e-commerce platform on the web right now. If you want to start up a shop, there are so many plugins and apps and stuff. So I think this is really good for Facebook, especially if this coin Libra actually gets used as, like, if it's a preferred option on Shopify, that's going to help, like, instantaneous traction in millions of places. So that's pretty smart. All right. Next topic is going to be about the election. Well, 2020 re-election futures. Yeah. So,
Josh, I know you like betting. I know you love talking about politics. And I know, I believe you placed a bet on the previous election, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, it was, to be honest, it was a pretty easy bet to make. I mentioned it before. It was betting on Donald Trump. I mean, if you watch CNN, I don't know anyone who watches CNN, apart from in airports. People watch CNN because you're forced to watch it while you're waiting. But the people that do watch CNN believe that Hillary Clinton was going to win. But all you had to do was basically look at the advertising data available to you. So one way, if you want to find out true sentiment, is to go on Facebook and pretend that you're going to run some Facebook ads and look for interests. So you can search within a country, and so I search within US, and then people basically self-declare if they are fans of candidate A or candidate B, right? So it's like a version of an A-B test, but basically in real life. So there were far more organic supporters of Donald Trump than there were of Hillary Clinton. And the numbers were not even close. I mean, it was nowhere near like the story presented in the mainstream media. Plus, the odds were so good for Donald Trump. So I got in at Donald Trump on like 4-1, knowing that he had a lot more support. So it was an easy bet.
Nice. You can't get those odds on this election. You want to know what the Trump futures is trading for?
Yeah, what is it?
It looks like it's 0.62. So I guess that means if you bet 62 cents, you win a dollar. So you're not quite doubling your money, but not too bad. And I know sometimes you bet on things even if you're not a big fan of the project. So they're also going to have a Bernie future, Biden, Warren, Pete, Bloomberg. So are you going to bet big on Trump? But if you get good enough odds, even though you're not a fan, are you going to, you know, hedge your bet if you get good odds on Warren or Bernie?
No, I actually think that there's no chance that anyone wins except Donald Trump this time. It's going to be so much easier than it was last time. Last time he was a non-politician.
Just so you guys know, though, this advice from Josh is not financial advice. Don't go all in, but...
it's not financial advice. Do what you want. I mean, it's your money, but I'm not giving you advice.
It's not betting advice.
Yeah, but as far as I'm concerned, this isn't even a difficult one to see. I mean, the Democrats are in complete disarray at the moment. They've got Joe Biden, who, let's be kind and call him Sleepy Joe, but his other name could be Creepy Joe. I mean, you just need to look at some of the memes out there with Joe Biden, and that doesn't go well, to be honest. And then, I mean, Bloomberg, he's a bit of a mad lad. I think he was mates with Trump back in the day. I wouldn't be surprised if they've got a pact or something, because like, maybe Bloomberg's put in there to make Trump look moderate or reasonable, because Mike Bloomberg's book from like 30 years ago, it's been all over the papers recently. So if you've got some time to read some of the wit and wisdom of Bloomberg, it's pretty funny. I mean, it's not PC, let's put it like that. So, and he's running for the PC party. So
you should have seen the opening salvo that Warren gave him at the most recent debate. It wasn't good, but we'll have to link that clip down below. But yeah, another thing I want to talk about is that you're interested in US politics. And when I lived abroad in France and South Korea, I was surprised that how much interest there is in US politics, because it doesn't really go the other way. You know, with most of the leaders in Europe, most Americans couldn't even name more than one or two. So can you talk a little bit about, like, why are people from other countries so fascinated with U.S. or U.S. politics? Because I was really surprised.
Well, the number one reason is there's a potential that U.S. bombs the hell out of your country if you don't get along with the U.S. So let's not forget that. The U.S. Army is in lots of places around the world. And, you know, I think that It's a welcome force in most of the world, but in some parts of the world, it's not so welcome. So there's always that factor. There's the massive, on the ground presence of American troops in almost every country in the world. That aside, America's the wealthiest country in the world, and a lot of America's decisions do impact on the rest of the world economy. So it's pretty basic. And then also the final thing is information is very accessible about America. It's not like in North Korea where it's hidden and secret. I mean, it's pretty open. It's a very open society. You can find most of the information. The media does. I know many people say that the media is terrible in America and blah, blah, blah. But the fact is, if you want to talk about anything, you can publish it and it will become public. And that's unlike many countries in the world. So I think that that's quite interesting.
Yeah, I want to push back, though. Of course, you're going to be interested in what the U.S. does when it comes to foreign countries and foreign policy and stuff like that. But I was surprised, you know, of course, it's not good if a flock of drones visits your tropical wedding party or something. But yeah, for the most part, we are a force for good. But what I want to talk about is it seems like a lot of people outside the U.S. are interested in U.S. domestic policy, whether it's healthcare, guns, taxes, or just different rules. I'm surprised that they care so much about U.S. domestic policy as well. That's what I found surprising.
Yeah, I find it quite surprising as well. But perhaps it's because there's so much data as well that is out there and that's put out by the U.S. government. I mean, the U.S. government is massive. It's a huge bureaucracy. Some people say it's too big. But part of that large bureaucracy comes a lot of data. So it's quite good to look at from a, let's say, experimental point of view, because a lot of policies will happen in America first, and then you can have a look, did it work, what didn't work, and then apply parts of it to your own country or not. I mean, that's one theory. The other thing is just like, it's a leader in popular culture. I mean, I live in South Korea, and it's a little bit of a bubble in terms of the way that South Korea lives, but it's a little bit of a leader in, let's say, East Asia. So if you look at the dramas and you look at the pop culture, Korea's a leader in a bubble of Asia, but America is the leader in terms of in English speaking countries in terms of popular culture.
I tend to agree that a lot of things are going to happen in the U.S. first, but I think globally those things are changing, and maybe even like outside the globe. You know, if we look at our solar system, I think from 2020 onward, I think, you know, maybe the dark side of the HODL moon will kind of be leaders when it comes to crypto regulations and kind of, you know, leading the human race towards a brighter future.
All right. All right. Nice. All right. One. Do you know a guy called Owen Benjamin? Do you ever watch his stuff, the comedian?
Oh, he's kind of, I've seen him.
He's pretty out there. He's got some stuff on the moon. That's pretty funny that made me think of that. All right, let's go on to the next topic.
Well, I think he believes in flat earth now. He's kind of gotten off the rails.
But he's got an absolute mad lad, that fella.
Let's go, let's go from political battles with Trump and the Democratic field to crypto friends who became crypto enemies. Yeah, childhood friends battle over ownership of North America's largest Bitcoin mine. I think soon this Bitcoin mine will be surpassed by one in Texas. But basically, they both put in, I think, a small investment, $25,000. It turned into something huge, and they've been getting buyout offers. And one of them wants to sell. I think they're getting, apparently, according to the lawsuit, offers for $80 million. And then maybe later for $60 million. And the other guy seems like he's a complete HODL warrior. And he's like, there's no way we're selling this thing. We're going to the moon. So it seems like they're battling over, should we liquidate this company or not? It seems like the other guy moved the company with or without telling him to Puerto Rico. So in a lawsuit, it's kind of hard to tell who's telling the truth, but it's kind of interesting. And, yeah, we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, sounds pretty wild. I mean, one guy, like, it, he's going full spectrum HODL warfare right there. But the other guy, maybe he's being smart. He just wants to, I mean, how much money is enough? That's the thing. Maybe he had a goal. He had a goal like, all right, 10 million. And then that passed and he's like, oh, 20 then. Okay.
Yeah, maybe it wasn't a financial goal. Maybe his goal was change the world.
Yeah, well, it could be. I mean, noble goals, why not? But I think once you reach your financial goals, you've got to be able to be realistic or be honest with yourself and say, look, I've reached what I wanted to achieve. Let's take some profits, maybe keep a little bit in there like Dan Conway did. Let's, you know, let a bit roll of the dice, YOLO, whatever. But once you've hit your, your main goals, you should be quite happy. And it's a shame to see childhood friends feuding. So there's no need for that, in my opinion. Well, from one feud to with childhood friends to basically a guy who loves to feud with absolutely everybody.
Yes.
At any time, any place, anywhere. He is the ultimate cage warrior, Craig Wright.
Can't stop talking about him because this, you know.
Well, this one is mad, actually. This is
mad. So before we thought, what are the chances Craig Wright's at Satoshi? It's went from like, I think every month we just add a zero. 1 in 100. Now it was 1 in 1,000, 1 in 10,000. Last month it was 1 in 100,000. Now it's at least 1 in 1,000,000 because I think this guy just needs to be, you know, give him a straitjacket, lock him up in a padded shell, and give him some fake bitcoins and just let him dance around in them because this is completely off the rails. He's basically wanting to sue both BTC and BCH. I don't know who he's suing there. You know, is it, you know, because, you know, they're splits, you know, but basically he's saying that he is basically in control of everything. It's violating copyright. He said that his representation of 21 million total bitcoins was only a verbal deal. The Bitcoin's creator should have the full rights to claim this unilateral contract with those nodes to issue. And then he's basically maintaining that he owns the copy of any database created from the Genesis in January 2009. And he's going to be licensing it. So I wonder if all the Bitcoin node operators are going to get a license from Craig Wright.
Yeah, I mean, this one is bizarre. I don't understand what he's thinking about here. I mean, he spent a lot of time in the academic world doing like PhD after PhD. And I think he's got his Juris Doctor in law, or he's at least got LLM. I don't know exactly. He's got too many degrees. And I think he thinks that everything in the academic world becomes real at one point. I don't know. So he's playing lawyer, perhaps, but this doesn't make sense. I mean, who are you suing? I mean, is he going to go after people that have touched Bitcoin, have Bitcoin Cash? It doesn't make sense. Honestly, this is where he's gone off the deep end. So Bitcoin ain't what it used to be. This is the next story. So
yeah, let's do that because I like to hear from the Bitcoin OGs, and a lot of them, they've soured on the original project or they've started their own project. They're like, you know, Bitcoin isn't what it used to be. Of course, there were the two splits, BCH and BSV. But, you know, when he was first talking about it, he talked about how Bitcoin is basically cutting edge. It feels like we're changing the world. And now he's just talking about how he's not psyched on it. One thing he mentions is community infighting. Of course, we know there's been a lot of that. And also that it's not really changing, and it could destabilize it and hurt the whole crypto space.
Yeah, and I mean, he's got a TED talk. I think he was outspoken. I mean, he made a lot of money on it early on. He's still relatively young. It's like a lot younger than us, but he's right. The community has changed. It's becoming a little bit more hostile. It's becoming a bit fragmented. But I think this is inevitable, though, really, because you've got this weird chasm that blockchain has to cross, which is from the enthusiasts, the hardcore people, the people that understand blockchain and want it to be peer-to-peer cash. And then you've got the enterprise business world on the other side that want to use parts of blockchain for some useful things in their businesses, but maintain control, so to speak. And then you've got in the middle, like billions of people that don't know about blockchain and then would use it if it was useful. And so you've got these enterprises trying to make something useful, but they haven't quite managed to do it on a mass scale yet. So blockchain industry is changing, and it's going to continue to change eventually for the better, but we do have to go through some tough times to get to the good times, I think. So this is just one of those times.
Yeah, definitely. I think the infighting is obviously the big thing that hurt it with the block sizes and the fights over those, which is really the only thing that most people were fighting about was the block size and whether the fees were too high or if it's going to become too centralized or not. Another thing is that one of Bitcoin's biggest strengths is also its biggest weaknesses. Charles Hodgkinson once said, One of the biggest problems with Bitcoin is that it's blind, deaf, and dumb, and that was by design. So it's made to be hard to change, but that one of its strongest characteristics is also its probably biggest weakness. It's hard to change. So it's got, there are advantages to that and disadvantages to that. So that's why we see people fork off and create like Charles Costinson with Cardano, Ethereum, and these other forks of Bitcoin that are still used as peer-to-peer cash, or some upcoming interviews we're going to have with some privacy-based projects. Like we've got Monero, Grin, Beam, Zcoin, and we're going to see peer-to-peer crypto and whether Bitcoin's going to go up as an asset, as a, you know, a settlement layer, holding it like you hold gold and basing something off it. It's definitely possible, and it's kind of exciting, but it's good to see more OGs kind of distance themselves, because, you know, people are sheep. They just follow the crowd. So if enough crypto OGs kind of change the narrative, yeah, I think it can change.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it will change eventually, but let's be honest, the industry is in this like weird plateau right now. There are still a lot of hodlers out there, ourselves included. We're on the dark side of the hodl moon, hodling away with our moon bags. But there are a lot of people that have lost interest, and it's going to take some, let's say, some big breakthrough for this to reach the mainstream. Perhaps it will be a Samsung phone that actually has more than just a blockchain wallet on it, and people could actually use it for something. This is where we are in the industry, looking for real use cases now. That's where we are. So, but one use case that will always be there for Bitcoin will be a hedge against hyperinflation. So let's finish up with the last story, which is about financial meltdown.
Yes. So I want to talk about this. Yeah, Eric Voorhees is also another crypto OG. And this was a very interesting interview he did with CoinDesk. He talked about a lot of different things, but I want to talk about his prediction that there will be a financial meltdown within the next 5 years, and crypto is going to be ready. So obviously, I don't want a financial meltdown because it's going to hurt a lot of people, but this would really lead to a lot of crypto adoption. And when the interviewer first asked him, they kind of laughed because he made this prediction 5 years ago as well, that like in 5 years there'd be a financial meltdown. But yeah, maybe he was just 5 years off. But basically, he's saying that, you know, this this game of this juggling act that the federal banks are doing, especially with the U.S., which is, you know, their dollar is no longer backed by gold. Sooner or later, this house of cards is going to come down, and no one's going to take these bonds, and then it's really going to get crazy. And the banks will try and print their way out of it, and that'll lead to hyperinflation and really some bad things. But basically, he's been making this prediction. You know, Ron Paul's made similar predictions. I think Peter Schiff, who's not a crypto fan, has made these predictions. And I think it's honestly, you know, I think they're right. I just don't know when it's going to happen. You know I'm personally hodling gold and crypto because I know it not only is it an investment, it's a hedge against something bad like this happening. And if an American's doing this, if you're living in some other country, you definitely need to be doing this, in my opinion. What do you think, Josh?
Yeah, I agree with that last point. If you are not an American, you should definitely be doing this. And if you are an American, why not have a little bit of your portfolio in this? I mean, even if it's just 1%, that's fine. So let's wrap it up there for this month's crypto currently in February 2020. I'll see you next time on the dark side of the hodl moon. Kay, do you want to wrap up?
Yeah, that was a nice little February crypto currently. Yeah, we've got some big projects coming up. But yeah, until next moon mission, we'll see you guys on the dark side of the hodl moon.
Thank you for joining us on Dark Side of the Hodl Moon. If you haven't already subscribed, please do so. Also, be sure to join our Telegram group, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, and follow us on BitChute and YouTube, where you can find all the episodes as well as highlights from previous episodes. You can also visit us at darksideofthehodlmoon.com. Hodl Moon!